And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-host Aaron Varola.
Hey guys, what's up? Welcome to the 32nd episode of the Fanboy Garage. Woo! We are here, we are doing this. Lots to unpack with this episode. So I should let's get right into it, huh?
Yeah, so I guess the big news as of now is the Shazam teaser trailer. Right? That was the thing that got everybody talking. And I mean I thought it looks like a lot of fun. I liked it. You know, I'll wait to see a full trailer. Yeah, I mean, from what I've seen so far, I can't say anything other than the fact that I think it looks like fun and I'm, you know, looking forward to the movie.
Yeah, I was kind of like, man.
Well, you, yeah.
So. I don't know what else to say. I mean, I know.
You've become so jaded now towards these things.
I really am. And you know, the funny thing is that so many people have already seen this trailer. You know, folks in the industry, I mean, folks we know, Mario's already seen the full trailer. I guess it was supposed to be part of, what is that, Kid Arthur movie thing that's happening. It was supposed to be on that. I'm interested to see the whole thing, but, like, what we did see seemed okay. I don't know. There were some bits of it I liked, and then some of it I didn't really like. I like the whole jumping off of the roof saying Shazam. I actually like the transition, like how quickly it looks, you know, where he is like a little kid walking, and then it says Shazam, and then it's, you know, it's Captain Marvel. So I think it has potential, but I'm not chomping at the bit for it. I'll just put it to you that way. I'm not really excited, but I'm not really like down in the dumps on it either. So
I think what you need to do is remember Wonder Woman, right? And the reason why I say that is because I think you've been stung so many times now by these, you know, so far these DCEU movies that and you know, just people remember, so even though Aquaman has been a huge success, we didn't like the movie. So That's also our perspective, that, or at least Aaron's perspective, that may be a little different from other people's as we talk about this. But, you know, Wonder Woman was a movie that you really loved, mixed in with a bunch of movies that you really did not love. So I don't know that you hold it. I don't know that you really need to necessarily be holding the past of this, you know, DCEU, you know, and holding these new movies up to that. I just think you should probably better off taking it. Now, if you're telling me you truly just like this, what you've seen so far just isn't really doing much for you for what it is, that's different. But, you know, if it's just like, oh, I'm just kind of done with these movies,
It's not really, it has nothing to do with the Zack Snyder and the sort of previous regime. It's not really that, because, you know, if I'm being honest with you, I find some enjoyment in BVS. You know, there are bits of it I like, and there's, you know, large chunks of it I don't like. Overall, I think it's a beautiful movie, and I can understand where it was going and how folks can feel so, you know, hit or miss with it. I'm kind of like a middle of the road guy. I adore Man of Steel. You know, Justice League, for what it's worth, is an okay movie. I mean, I was pretty harsh on it, but, you know, I can see the foundations of what it was trying to be. You know, I love Wonder Woman. And, you know, look, back when all of these movies were coming out, you know, Wonder Woman to me, I was like not into it. The marketing and all, and I was like, where is the marketing? And it didn't roll out to like, you know, maybe 2 weeks before the film came out. And it took me some time to see it, and everybody's expectations, and they were like super high. And then when people went to go see the movie and they came back and reported about how good it was, it kind of got my hopes up, right? And I went into that movie and I cried my eyes out at the end of it. It was just such a really, like, I thought it was funny. I thought it had great emotional depth, and it was a very powerful film. And I could, you know, going into Aquaman, I was like, okay, if they're going to cut, you know, the good parts of the DCU, you know, sort of model Aquaman and these other films to Wonder Woman and kind of drop the baggage of the Zack Snyder stuff, the dark, the brooding, all of that. I'm open to that. I'm in with that. We go to see Aquaman, and I think it was a couple of things that set it up. You know, it was I was already sold into Jason Momoa as Aquaman. I thought he, you know, was really taking a radical stand, you know, radical position with the character and like doing something really cool with him. And I saw that in Justice League, so I was sold in on that. And then it was all of the commentary from people, you know, saying how good Aquaman was. And then I go see the film and it's like, I don't, I'm not going to sit here and I don't really want to get into Aquaman again. But I think the biggest thing for me, it was like horrible joke after horrible joke, you know, one after the other. It felt templative in terms of, you know, people having a conversation, explosion, you know, catching people off guard. That happened like 5 times in the film. And when I can start spotting that kind of stuff, it just started to irk me. I don't think the visual effects were really all that. The de-aging stuff was a little wonky. I mean, there's a whole like litany of right. things that I had problems with. And again, I'm not going to go into it in depth, but it like hit me below the belt because I'm like, oh my God, I'm so excited to see it. And then I'm like, really?
But now
this is what,
let me just say
what we got.
So on Twitter, you had made a statement about how like, you just don't think at this point these movies are for you. But, and so I'm not exactly sure what that means. Like, what exactly about these movies do you think is not for you anymore?
So I don't, and this is just in looking at, you know, what they did with Aquaman and what I was expecting from Aquaman. I was expecting Wonder Woman in Aquaman. I expected something that had a lot of heart to it, that wasn't afraid to take itself seriously, but also not afraid to like weave in some of the levity and jokes and things like that. Like Wonder Woman has a lot of good humor in it, but you find yourself like endeared to all of the characters, like, you know, big and small. You know, Diana for herself leads that film start to finish. Steve Trevor is great. And the whole, you know, her whole crew of people, like there's things to like latch on to, you know? And the third act, yeah, is not perfect, but for the, you know, the other parts of that film, it's good stuff, you know? And so I kind of went into Aquaman thinking we were going to get that. And then, you know, after I walked out of it, I'm like, I think these movies are skewing in such a different direction than it's not playing in that, we can be fun, but still be serious. It's more of like, we're just going to be fun, you know? And I don't want to feel like I'm being patronized in a film. And that's kind of how I felt coming out of Aquaman. Like some of the dialogue was so on the nose. I'm like, this isn't really what I signed up for. I wanted like a really good, thought-provoking hero movie that had fun and depth, and I didn't get that. And as I look at the trailers for Shazam, I'm like, it feels like Aquaman to me. It's all like ha ha ha, like popcorny, and that's fine, and that's you know, and if that's what you're into, I'm not trying to knock anyone, and I really do hope the movie is successful and does really well, because a success for one comic book movie is a success for all comic book movies. But I just don't think it's something that I'm going to walk out of and go, oh my God, that was amazing.
Well,
I'm just resetting my expectations because
right.
I think it's like, it's meant to be lighthearted with little depth.
So like when you you're saying now, like, so you're not basing this on the entirety of the DCEU saying these movies aren't for me anymore. It's really, because I was going to say, well, the movies have been very different, you know, in the sense that like Man of Steel and BVS are nothing like Wonder Woman, and they're not like Justice League. We all know that thing, that thing is about. And Aquaman isn't like those two movies. And so it's basically you're saying, like, you, when you say these movies aren't for me anymore, you don't want lighthearted, jokey superhero movies that, and we don't know what Shazam Ultimate is going to turn out to be, but you're assuming that it's going to be just completely lighthearted and jokey and not have enough of a serious tone.
Right.
So you want balance, basically.
A lot of people have like compared it to Deadpool, like feeling kind of like Deadpool, and I'm like, no.
Yeah, well, I think that comparison happens mainly because of the fact that, you know, this thing was marketed similar to Deadpool as far as the fun that it was having in its marketing and not taking itself seriously. And it seemed like, and, you know, they did the viral thing with the memes and all that stuff. So, like, that was all very Deadpool-esque. I, you know, obviously, nobody expects this thing to be an R-rated, you know, uncomfortable adult-type movie. It's very much the opposite of that. But so I think that's where the Deadpool stuff comes from, because it was like, I think at the time when the marketing for Shazam, that initial, like, the viral marketing started, you know, we were still kind of in the darker DCEU, and it was like, well, this thing's going to stand out on its own.
Right.
And that's, I think, where the Deadpool comparison sort of came from. But now we're finding out that, well, obviously there's a shift now, right, in the DCEU with going more director, creator driven, less worrying about the shared universes, more focus on the characters, which is all good news. But also that this movie is not as removed from the continuity of the DCU as we may have thought it was going to be at the time. You know, it's very much there somewhere. Wherever this continuity is at this point, it's in there. I mean, Ben Affleck's Batman exists in that movie. Henry Cavill's Superman exists in that movie. So that, you know, that's the other thing. But yeah, I mean, for me, I don't, you know, I'm not, I really don't want to base my opinion on anything on a teaser trailer, let alone, look, forget about the trailer itself, but even just a teaser trailer, it's going to be really hard for me. But I'm okay with, like, I was okay with Aquaman being lighthearted and jokey. I just didn't think the jokes landed for me, because he was lighthearted and jokey in Justice League, and I enjoyed him in that movie.
Right.
So I'm okay with Shazam being lighthearted and jokey, if it keeps within this, like, a certain spirit, and there's room for it to not constantly be that. So that's why I'm like, just like, I don't expect the Joker movie to be lighthearted and jokey.
Oh no, not at all.
You know what I mean? I'm okay with that, with having that balance of dependent on the character, let things be something that maybe works and is consistent for that character, rather than have an overall feel where, like, every superhero has to be like Batman, brooding and dark, right? That was the mistake, one of the mistakes, I think, of the past. Let's just have each character have their own feel that stays and feels somewhat true to that character, and you'll get a variety of different types of movies, which I think is a really exciting thing.
Right. No. I agree with that. I mean, you can't just use the blueprint and kind of like force the characters into that mold. It's just not going to work at all. I am super interested in the Joker film, because it does look and feel very different, and does have a twisted vibe to it. It's just the over-indexing on the lightheartedness, I think, is where I'm having a problem with some of the films. And you're right. It's unfair to judge Shazam based on a teaser trailer, or trailer and a teaser. So, you know, of course I'm going to be there. We'll be at the Revengers watch party, and I'm sure everybody will ask me, you know, my opinions of it after we see it. I'm just, you know, the bar, regardless of word of mouth, regardless of the marketing, the bar for me is super low. Super, super low. So I guess I might walk out of it going like, hey, yeah, that wasn't half bad, because my expectations are pretty much at the heels of my feet. But like I said, I wanted to do super well. I think the other piece too for me is that I'm not a big fan of Zachary Levi. So
and I know the suit bothers you. So
Yeah, the suit still continues to be a little bothersome for me, but it's fading out because I do kind of like the design of the lightning bolt on his chest and but whatever, those are little nitpicky things that I don't want to get hung up on, and I will give it the benefit of the doubt. It's just that, like, right now I'm just like, sure. That's just kind of it.
Well, I have a
You know, I
feeling
kind of, you
that
know, it's like one of the... Go ahead.
I
Go
have a
ahead.
feeling
What was
that
that?
until the final credits start to roll, that you're basically going to be like that. Like this
Yeah.
movie sounds like it's going to have to prove itself to you.
It will. It
And
will
I'm
for
not
sure.
sure. I don't know if you're setting yourself up for that to
For
not
failure.
happen, because I don't know at this point what it can do to change your mind. Because you're already saying, like, if it's lighthearted and jokey, I don't think I'm going to be in on it, even if the jokes may be good. Like, I just don't think you want to see this type of movie. So
That
if it is
I mean don't
exactly what you think it might be, then I don't, what can it do to make you actually enjoy it?
Like, I don't want to misconstrue the idea of lighthearted and jokey is like totally out of the picture for me, because there's lots of MCU films that are lighthearted,
Sure,
right?
and we've talked about it a lot on the show and how
Yeah.
comedy gets
And
a bad rap sometimes in
right,
these
no,
movies.
absolutely.
Yeah.
And I don't want to paint that picture for the DCU at all. I think it's when they over-index on the lighthearted and jokey stuff that it just falls flat for me. I mean, you know, one of the lines in Aquaman that actually like piqued my interest and then it was killed automatically was this line of like from Arthur, where he finally meets Orm and he's like, you know, I always thought about you. I always wanted to meet my little brother, and then I realized you were a dick. And I was like, what? You know, I thought they were gonna like lean in on that a little bit more, and I was
Yeah.
kind of disappointed by that. But I get the character, you know what I'm saying? Like, so. I mean, maybe it's me wanting to have my cake and eat it too, where I appreciate the humor from Aquaman. Like, I loved, you know, we talked about this too. I loved his line in Justice League, where he's like, "Nah, we're all gonna die." Like, this guy's dressed up as a bat and he's sitting on the lasso of truth. I thought that was really smart, piece of dialogue. It's just that, in my opinion, nothing in Aquaman lived up to that moment in Justice League, for better or worse. Like, there was nothing that was as good as that from the character. And I just didn't feel that there was any real depth to the character. Like, you know,
Right.
even that opening scene between father and son for Black Manta was just over-indexed. Like, the
Right.
acting was, you know, and I don't really want to get into this stuff with Aquaman, but that's sort of where it's at. We'll see. I might come out. I really do. I mean, I'm not gonna be super stubborn, and I might come out of Shazam and go, wow, that surprised me. That was really good. They didn't. It wasn't as, you know, as
Yeah.
bad as I thought it was gonna
So
be.
it's funny for me, and I don't want to make this about a Marvel versus DC thing at all, although I do find it funny that, you know, I do laugh that there's a Captain Marvel movie and a Shazam movie coming out within like a month of each other, and from different studios. But anyway, like for me, I have the opposite feeling. So, and I'm a you know, I like much of the MCU, so I'm not one of those like, oh, Marvel, they're bad, they're cookie cutter, all this stuff. But I feel like for me, this Shazam teaser kind of got me excited. I thought it looked fun. I thought it looked different. Whereas the Captain Marvel trailer just hasn't done anything for me, because I feel like at this point it's like, well, yeah, it kind of feels like a Marvel movie. And I don't get the same vibes off of it. Like, that trailer seems very cookie cutter to me. So, you know, I like the fact that I'm seeing something that's standing out. And I do think that that's where DC could and should have been all along excelling in, is the fact that they could have gone this route. Creator driven, base the tone and the feel of the movie on the character and have everything stand out rather than something that seems like it's part of one giant machine. And I'm not particularly pumped for Captain Marvel. And it's been a while. I mean, you know, like Ant-Man, I didn't expect to be excited about, but I was more excited for Ant-Man than I am for Captain Marvel, like based on the trailers. just because those trailers just haven't done anything for me. Right. And, you know, had it not, I think it's going to be an important movie as far as the future and even the history of the MCU because of the things that it's going to set up. But other than that, that's really where my interest is at that point. It's just to see, like, how important is this? Is this thing going to be as important to the MCU as I think it might be? More mm-hmm. so than, like, is this going to be an enjoyable movie?
Yeah, I wonder if there's, like, an actual necessity to go see Captain Marvel. And, you know, that's everything you're saying at this point. And I wonder if the, you know, they've only really dropped, what, 2 trailers for that film. I wonder if they kind of peel back the curtain a little bit just to build some of that excitement.
Yeah.
And kind of, you know, get you thinking about Thanos again, you know, almost like a precursor to Endgame. Like, you absolutely have to see Captain Marvel if you kind of want to get some answers on Endgame. You know what I mean? Like, I wonder if they start building some of that tension in there about, you know, Thanos is exists in this world and all of that. Because right now they're going super heavy on, obviously, the introduction of Captain Marvel and all the cool things she can do and the Skrulls and yep. all of that. But, you know, we still have to remember that. And they did show, you know, glimpses of Ronan. So Ronan is a component of the film, but you'd also have to think that so is Thanos to some degree. So I wonder if there's some, you know, special footage that they can release to get people excited about them and get them thinking, you know, they can't miss Captain Marvel because it's so deeply rooted in what's going to happen in Endgame.
Well, which yeah,
obviously it is because, you know, the end credits, the stringer had something related yeah. to her. So,
I mean, I don't think Marvel is overly concerned about, I don't, you know, the fact that Chris Lasanti hasn't been blown away by the trailers for Captain Marvel. I think Marvel Studios will have some confidence in this thing.
Give yourself some credit.
Yeah, and not have to worry too much about the hype. I'm just not super hyped for it, but I don't think that's
the first
a general
person I heard say that.
Really?
Yeah, no. I've heard a couple of people who said they weren't really blown away by Captain Marvel.
Yeah. So, you know, well, let's stick while we're on the topic of Marvel and female Marvel characters. Black Widow.
Yeah.
It is rumored to start shooting in late February.
That's right.
So
I mean, that's one that, I mean, I know it's been rumored for quite some time, but it's one that I didn't really expect to actually happen.
Yeah, I know.
To be honest with you, I mean, she's an okay character. I just didn't think they'd throw a solo movie at her. So,
well,
I don't want to say
don't
quickly,
say so quickly.
It's
yeah,
because it's been a long time. I mean, she's been around since
Iron Man 2. Yeah. I mean, she's one of the she's been a phase one character and again, like you said, they've teased it over time, but like, it didn't look like she was ever, you would think she would have gotten a movie by now.
Yeah.
She's been in so many of them.
Yeah.
You know, but,
she's an interesting character. And I think probably the one of the, you know, sort of behind the scenes, like tier 2 characters within, you know, the MCU that could probably pull it off. You're not going to want to see a war machine movie because it's
no
likely going to rely heavily on Tony Stark.
Well, and it's
so.
Just too much like Iron Man.
Right.
You know, at that point, just do the comics thing and let Rhodey become Iron Man then if you're going to do that.
Right.
But, you know, for me, this is a character, and I know they're not going to do this, but this is one of those characters where I hope that they would throw the formula out the window and just go, like, balls to the wall. Like, give us, like, a John Wick or an Atomic Blonde-style movie based on this character. And I don't think there's any way we're ever going to see that. It's probably going to just still follow the same kind of formula.
Right.
But, like, these are the types of times where it's like, this character could really benefit from that. And I think you could make a completely off-the-wall, like, action movie based on, or like, you know, spy thriller based on this character rather than just kind of go with the traditional deal. And I, cause I don't have a lot of interest if they go that route, like the traditional kind of cookie cutter route. But if they went like, gave us like a, something like that, then I would be all in on it. And
yeah, like a low budget, like action film.
Just a, yeah, it doesn't even have to be. Yeah, I mean, the budget could be whatever it is. They certainly have the money for it. But,
no, but that,
yeah,
that kind of vibe, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's funny because you mentioned Atomic Blonde, and like, you know, I was thinking about stuff like this, and I'm like, that those films kind of take from that Jason Bourne, you know, template. And then there's like Red Sparrow, right? Which could have very well have been a Black Widow story. What I kind of want to see, this is like my little like guilty pleasure here, is I would love to see like a Black Widow take on Long Kiss Goodnight with Gina Davis type film. Okay. Where she forgets who she is and then boom, you know, she's putting yeah. these crazy situations, like that kind of stuff. I would love that.
Right.
Hands down.
But again, yeah. I mean, the general feeling is like we both would like to see them go in a completely different direction and give yeah. this character like its own, give that movie its own feel.
Yeah. Let it breathe a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, like really like let us like take us into, you know, what it was like to either create a Black Widow or like some of the things she's dealing with. Like, you know, it was funny. I was watching Age of Ultron and they tried to kind of give her some color and it right. just didn't, it just, I don't know if it's Scarlett Johansson or just it felt forced, but that whole thing about like there was a graduation ceremony and we, you know, I'm a monster and I can't have kids and she's trying to relate to Bruce, you know, and you know, that this stuff kind of felt forced. I'm like, there's so much more to you than that. And you know, the funny thing is that I think it was like in Peggy Carter,
Agent Carter,
they start talking a little bit about the Black Widow program mm-hmm. back in the 40s.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, that was some intriguing stuff that they did there. It's a shame that show got canceled. But yeah, I'd love to see more about the program, you know, more about how she came up. I kind of don't want to see like a modern day Black Widow story. I kind of want to set in the past a little bit.
I agree. Yeah. That's where, you know? To me, that's where the intrigue is with that character.
Yeah. Like, do I mean, something
going
with Nick
forward,
Fury
it is what it
recruits
is.
Her.
Yeah. Going forward, like, she's yeah. just like an ass kicker, which is fine, but like, there's not a lot of meat to that. But you go back, yeah. There's a whole lot of stuff that you could do if totally. You're going back.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Definitely want to see that.
So, Disney opened up about the Disney Plus streaming service.
Yeah.
So what do you got on that?
So this was a fascinating story that popped up. It's typically not the kind of stuff that we tend to, I guess, unravel here on the Fanboy Garage, because it was on Yahoo Finance. And they talk about, you know, just to kind of give you some context, they kind of talk about the amount of money Disney's already lost in streaming as of like last year, so 2018, it's like up to $1 billion. So
right,
a lot of that has to do with like, you know, access to content, things like that, where they were pouring their money. So Netflix, and so it makes, you know, obviously it makes business sense why they'd want to do the the streaming service their own. So if what we need to remember, and it's something that we brought up on the Revengers 1 year anniversary podcast, was that our Revenge of the Fans first year anniversary podcast. Anyways, was that the deal with Fox gives Disney a majority share control of Hulu. So about 60%. So there's that play that they've got. They also invested in ESPN, so that streaming service, which has already launched and
ESPN
has been
Plus.
Wildly successful.
Yep.
And now you've got Disney Plus, and so that's where they're going to be creating their own content, much like the DC Universe, and that's everything from movies to shows and all of that. So they're starting to kind of peel the curtain back a little bit about how they're going to divide and conquer across all of those platforms and when we would expect to kind of hear or see some of the first bits of footage, trailers, and all that. So that will be on April 11th. Well, they'll have a an earnings call, and they'll kind of show off a little bit about, you know, show off a little bit of what the Disney Plus streaming service looks like. And that, and if you think about it, there's already stuff that's in production. So you've got The Mandalorian. So a lot of Star Wars stuff will be coming out there. They have some content geared up, you know, as we've talked about the MCU, you know, Loki series, a Scarlet Witch series, and some other stuff. And then they've got like full blown movies, like live action Lady and the Tramp, which will be coming. So, right. Lots of exciting stuff. And it, you know, I think if there's anyone that's going to change the sort of streaming landscape game, it's going to be Disney, without a doubt.
Yeah. I could tell you, ahead. I was at, the first, I was at UFC, on ESPN, live, right? It was at Brooklyn at the Barclays Center. And obviously, it was the first show for UFC on ESPN Plus, and the ESPN Plus marketing was just all over the place. And from people that I know that watched the show on ESPN Plus, they said that, like, from a picture quality standpoint and everything, it was pretty much unrivaled. Like, they wow. said that it looked better than most major streaming services, for whatever that's worth. So clearly Disney is pumping a lot of money, like you said, into these things because, mm-hmm. you know, this is, they're looking at this as their future, and they don't want these streaming services to really be much different from television. You know, they right. want them to be considered just like another channel, you know, that you're flipping through to watch content on. So I found that very encouraging. That
yeah.
the people were raving so much about the quality of ESPN Plus, because I would assume that Disney Plus is going to be the same thing, just with different content.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I think, you know, they've been playing the long game. They've been making acquisitions behind the scenes. And some of that is, you know, directly related to, you know, streaming services and just the technology behind it. So, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I think it's been a long time coming. They've been kind of cooking this for a little bit. So I'm expecting the user experience to also be pretty tight. For those folks that might have kids, or you may not, and you like to watch Star Wars Rebels and you use the Disney XD app or the Disney Now app, on some of your, you know, whether it be Apple TV or whatever, that's a pretty seamless, system or interface rather. And, if it's anything like that, I mean, they're going to strike gold. I think they're really good yes. at sort of packaging not only the content itself, but the way that you kind of navigate your way yeah. through it. It's very smart, very intuitive. And, that makes all the difference. You know, I think that's, you know, in the past year or so, we've seen, you know, Netflix and Hulu, and I think Amazon Prime is definitely due for a refresh on their
user interface. And it's not much better.
Yeah. I think the DC Universe needs it tremendously.
They could benefit from a reboot. Yeah. It's not the most user-friendly, at least on the Roku. I mean, it's easy, but it's things aren't really well placed and whatnot.
Yeah.
I do say I agree. The Disney Now TV Anywhere app, which is how I watched Star Wars Rebels the last couple of seasons anyway, is a fantastic TV Anywhere app. It's so yep. much better than there's so much more to that for what's a free app than it has any business having.
Yeah. Well, because they lay things out by like characters, and yep. if you don't like it
and
that
it
way, they do it by shows.
Yeah,
it's really smart. It's actually, you can put it in the hands of like a 5-year-old, and they'll be able to figure it out.
And
which
it lets
is exactly
you create,
what it needs to be.
It lets you create favorites.
Yeah,
and yeah, you can have like favorite characters, and then they'll just give you anything involving that character. It's really cool.
I mean, and you'd imagine that with all of the properties that they're sort of, you know, putting under this, Disney Plus umbrella, you'd be able to say, okay, yeah, I'm a big fan of Star Wars. So basically everything that's related to Star Wars is going to be populated here, and everything related to the MCU and Marvel is going to be populated there. Yeah, I'm really excited to see what they come up with, and you know, it's going to be launched this summer. I expect, you know, after the earnings call on the 11th, that we'll start to see and hear a lot more about the Disney Plus. And the other bit of information that came from this report on Yahoo Finance is regarding pricing. So Bob Iger anticipates that pricing will fall sharply under Netflix. Now, that's not really saying much because Netflix is raising their prices, but you know, I wouldn't expect to pay more than, you know, $10.99.
Well, not that this is an apples to apples comparison, but ESPN Plus, which has spent, you know, spent a good amount of money. They spent a good amount of money on UFC to get the rights and whatnot, but that's $4.99.
Yeah.
So obviously I don't expect it to be that cheap, but it wouldn't surprise me, you know, if they do, if they are not lying about, you know, when they say it's going to be competitively priced. Because so far it seems like, you know, they certainly did it with ESPN Plus, which is not going to have as much content as Disney Plus, but still, $4.99 is pretty cheap.
Yeah, yeah, I'm excited.
You know, and the funny thing about Netflix, you talk about Netflix raising their prices. I saw an article the other day, and I've been saying this for years. I don't know how they're able to do it, but you know how Netflix is just hemorrhaging money, and that they don't know how much longer that's going to be sustainable.
I think I glossed over the same article. I don't know if it was the same one, but it was a picture of Anthony Mackie's latest movie. And the reporter basically said something like, if this movie represents anything, it should signal your time to jump off of Netflix.
Yeah.
I'm like, damn.
Yeah. I mean, Netflix is all the money that they've spent on original content to try to compete with what they correctly viewed as the future, which was that these streaming services were going to be have to rely on more original content as the content providers started their own services. So they were right about that. The problem is there's just so much of it out there. They have so much original content, most of which is not particularly good, that they're just, I mean, there's so much money being hemorrhaged by that company right now. I can't imagine that they're going to be able to sustain that unless something changes dramatically. And in a few years, they're not sold.
Yeah. So I think one of the things that might shake the foundation a bit is actually the Academy Awards, because of Roma, a movie I haven't seen, but apparently nominated for 10 Academy Awards.
Yeah. I've heard a lot about it.
So Alfonso Cuarón, who, you know, famous for a whole bunch of movies like Gravity and, you know, Prisoner of Azkaban, the third Harry Potter installment. So, you know, I think that might actually, that might be the thing that changes the game because, you know, then they're working with like, you know, really, you know, tier one directors to create content, or, you know, major production studios that are looking to Netflix to kind of seed their movies versus, you know, Netflix themselves kind of like, I don't know how it works actually, but it feels like most of the content on Netflix that's Netflix produced is like B level, B and C level.
Yeah.
And very rarely do you get some of those like pow, like A plus.
Well, sure,
movies.
Because most of those are going to be, they're going to want them for the theater. You know, if it's that
right.
quality.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, I don't know. Well, I mean, I agree, man. I'm, you know, my wife and I were trying to watch something the other day, and I was like, she's like, oh, you know, let's go to the new release section. It was like Netflix produced. And I'm like, what? I don't want to see any of these films. I don't want to see the fifth Adam Sandler film. You know, I don't know. You know, there's so many. It's like the actors that you haven't seen in a long time, mm-hmm. kind of trying to make their like second comeback.
I find myself turning to Netflix less and less.
Same.
And I people are always telling me, "Oh, did you see this show on Netflix? Did you see that?" I'm like, "No, man. I guess if all I had was Netflix." Then yeah, I'd be looking for things to watch on it. But since Netflix is one of many streaming services that I subscribe to, like I look to everything else first, and then I, unless there's something like it's just Netflix that I'm focused on for that period of time. But like, I find myself looking towards the other services first, and then I go to Netflix when I have like no other options, which is kind of weird considering how all this started.
I go for the things that I know are proven, like proven shows, right? Mm-hmm. So the Marvel shows are great. Narcos is great. And then, you know, I just happened to stumble recently. We happened to stumble into the Fyre Festival documentary, which was like off the chain great. So, you know, they have their bright spots. You know, it's funny because I think it's also very different. My wife also watches some international type shows. And so from an international perspective, it seems like they do a really good job, too, in sort of creating that content. She loves like these like Spanish novellas. So, you know, I think it really all depends in terms of what you're looking for. Really. I mean, they have their licenses for some of the bigger movies. Like, you know, we've seen Infinity War and Solo, A Star Wars Story will likely be there soon. But once Disney Plus launches, we're not going to be seeing those films anymore. You know, some of those bigger tentpole films. So we'll see how Netflix reacts.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they've been, like I said, they've been spending lots of money in preparation for this moment. And let's see if they're raising their prices. Let's see how that works out for people. You know, a lot of people rely on Netflix as cord cutters, and they don't want to see their prices going up and up, especially when they have these other services now that they're bundling together. And, you know, let's see if they could survive. This was what they've been preparing for. So now let's see if they're prepared for it.
Yeah. It's kind of crappy that they would do that. That they would raise their price when they're going to end up losing a whole bunch of content.
Wow.
You know,
I mean, that's the way of the world, right? But, I mean, how often do you see cable companies, we lost all the Viacom channels, but we're raising the price. Well, wait a minute, what? Yeah. How'd that happen?
Yeah, it's like the MTA approach.
Yeah,
yes. We're cutting this whole subway line, and we'll be raising your fares.
So
that's a very New York-related thing.
Is. Yes, it is. Let's talk about the Oscars a little bit. You mentioned...
Yeah.
Briefly there and talking about Netflix, but so Black Panther winds up getting a nomination for Best Picture, and I've seen some feathers ruffled about it. I don't know why we take this stuff that seriously, but like as we talked about when we talked about the Golden Globes, I mean, I'm kind of, my days of caring about these award shows are pretty much over, when I used to be all about them. But you know, let's look at it just from a perspective of like the fanboy perspective, right? I don't know why anybody would be upset that Black Panther gets nominated for Best Picture, because it's a door that is now open.
Right.
So somebody has to be the first. There always has to be a first, and it's not always the most worthwhile, right? So, I mean, we see it in sports, right? I mean, Babe Ruth was not a first ballot Hall of Famer in baseball. You know, Jackie Robinson was not at all the best player. He wasn't even close to the best player in the Negro Leagues, when he came up to the Dodgers and broke the color barrier. But somebody has to be the first, and something always has to be the first, and it's not always the best or the whatever, but at least now this door is open. So superhero movies are now on the map as being something that could potentially be recognized as a Best Picture nominee.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with that. So I don't know why anybody would be upset about it. Now, okay, if you didn't think it was Oscar worthy, well, what does that even mean? I mean, Bohemian Rhapsody, which won Best Picture at the Golden Globes, is nominated for Best Picture here. If you look at the reviews on that movie, they were okay, right? So it's like the lowest rated Rotten Tomatoes like score for any movie that ever won a Best Picture at the Golden Globes. So, you know, I mean, I don't know why we have to really be up in arms over the fact that would I have preferred like a movie like Logan to have been the first? Of course. Logan, to me, was worthy of a Best Picture. Oscar. And it got nominated for one. It got nominated for like adapted screenplay. But, you know, I'm happy though that it finally happened and that, you know, we can, you know, move on now and hopefully, you know, this is the beginning of something great because these movies should be recognized. I have no problem with Black Panther. Now, what I do find odd is that a movie gets nominated for Best Picture and then a bunch of technical awards. Man. And is essentially shut out of, like, the acting category, the director, the even film editing, cinematography. It's not nominated for, like, any of those, which is weird. It's like, how could it be the Best Picture if you didn't? But that's what happens when they expand the number of Best Picture nominees and don't expand any of the other categories.
Right.
So it's like you can have up to 10 Best Picture nominees, but you can only have 5 of everything else. Well, then obviously something's going to get left out of those, which is why I think that's just a big flaw in the system to begin with. It's like it should be consistent. Either have, either let it be 5 across the board or make everything up to 10.
Yeah.
But so, yeah. I mean, and that's why I think some of this stuff is silly, but the score did get nominated, which is exciting because it was amazing.
Dude, it is amazing. So, amazing score. And I really hope it pulls through on that one at the very least because this guy, Ludwig Göransson, I mentioned him a couple of times. Phenomenal composer. The guy's doing so much good work. Actually composed, you know, I think, again, last time we talked about it was on another podcast, but I went back and looked and this dude's been busy. He scored Venom.
I was just about to say, as crazy as that movie is, I don't remember a piece of music from it.
Oh my God. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I was just kind of
shocked. It can't be a good thing. I mean, you should remember a score.
Yeah. But again, he did do Black Panther and Creed and Creed 2 and a whole bunch of other shows and stuff like that. So the guy's been busy.
Yes.
For sure. I think that, you know, in terms of the Oscars, I agree with everything you said about Black Panther and, you know, the doors that it's going to open for the comic book movies. Now, can we say that The Dark Knight and Heath Ledger's, nomination and ultimately a win should and could have done that? Yeah, without a doubt. But, you know, to see a comic book movie itself totally recognized is a great thing. And I think people should be happy about that. I don't really understand the reaction to it. Other than to say it's just typical fanboy nonsense.
Well, yeah, that's part of it. But I do think it's also context, right? So that's why I say, like, don't look at this thing as, like, from the perspective of, well, did you think Black Panther was worthy of being Best Picture nominee? That's a subjective thing, right?
Absolutely.
So everyone's going to have a different opinion on that. But the importance of this is where the context is key. The importance of Black Panther being nominated for Best Picture far outweighs whether or not you thought it deserved to be nominated for Best Picture because of what it means. Like I said, the door is now open. That barrier has been broken. And a superhero comic book movie produced by a comic book studio is nominated for Best Picture. And that is something that we should be excited about.
Totally. Yeah. Totally. And you know, I've also read people commenting like, well, Wonder Woman did the same thing. Yeah. 100% agree. I just don't know
what Wonder Woman did the same thing.
Well, in terms of like, you know, it was the first female solo film and
oh, sure. Yeah,
and all of that good stuff, you know, from, you know, making an impact and being a first of its kind, so to speak. But, you know, there's also a lot of back end stuff that happens. So it also relies on the studio to campaign for that film. There's a lot of internal politics that happens, you know, among those associations. So, you know, I don't know what Warner Brothers was doing.
Well, although technically Wonder Woman isn't even the first female superhero solo film. I mean, Supergirl with Helen Slater was, now granted, it's a fiasco of a movie,
you're right.
But it's that was the first, but hopefully You know, Wonder Woman, I would have been okay if Wonder Woman got nominated for Best Picture. That's my point. Like, at least now, you know, it's not going to be crazy to think that a movie like a Logan or something like, if something came out of that quality later on, that they could be in the conversation.
Yeah. And technically, you know, we forget about Blade.
Well, of course, yeah.
You know, Blade. I mean, hey, I freaking love Blade. Great movie.
Well, it's easy to forget. Ahead of its time, it is, and it's easy to forget about anything that came out pre, like MCU, pre DC, because the everything is so different. I mean, yeah, there have always been comic book movies and superhero movies, but you know, a lot of them were like Dolph Lundgren's Punisher, or those terrible Captain America movies, or you know, I mean, like for every Superman the movie or Batman 89 or you know, Nolan trilogy, there's a Catwoman, or you know, like I said, a Dolph Lundgren Punisher, or you know, or even like a, you know, Daredevil. I mean, stuff like that those were our movies. I mean, yeah, you know, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man was a great thing at the time, and those X-Men, first couple of X-Men movies, but that was not the norm back then. So it is easy to forget that those types of movies did exist, even the good ones. And unfortunately, the good ones get lost, you know, because we tend to forget about them, because we want to talk about how we're going to spend more time talking about how terrible the bad movies were than we will be talking about some of those pretty good or good movies that came out during that time period, because they've been eclipsed now by just this incredible amount of content that we get on a yearly basis.
Yeah. It's funny. I walked into my office the other day and, you know, one of my colleagues who's really into the awards, he's like, so A Star Is Born is pretty much wiped off the map, in terms of like winning, Best Picture or anything like that. He's like, Black Panther is really like kind of stealing the show, which really surprised me. But what ultimately surprised me about the nominees were some of the ones that were left off. So, you know, obviously Bradley Cooper, Best Director, all that stuff. Is crazy. I didn't see A Star Is Born, and I'm sure it's a great film, but the stuff that really shocked me was in the documentary pool, because Won't You Be My Neighbor was not nominated.
Right.
That's a damn good documentary about Mr. Rogers.
I mean, I'd be lying if I said I saw any of those to tell you whether they were better or worse than anything else.
Oh my God, man. But Mr. Rogers thing. And then the other one was Three Identical Strangers, which was fantastic. And then, you know, what's also great though about the Oscars is that, and I called it from the beginning, man, is that Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is up for the best animated film, and that thing better steal the show.
Well, it's been winning pretty much across the board.
Yeah.
At all these different award shows. So hopefully that's a
that
thing.
Is,
I mean, that
yeah,
could have
I mean,
easily
that's
been
a
best
film
picture.
That I think is being overshadowed by this Black Panther thing.
Well, yeah, because look, it is a bigger deal to be nominated for Best Picture than it is to be nominated for Best Animated Feature. Because it's just a high profile, it's, you know, Best Picture is the big category. So everyone talks about that. And I don't think anybody was surprised to see Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse nominated for Best Animated Picture, considering most people expect it to win. So I think that's why less and less people are talking about that. I think that was just a matter of fact thing.
Yeah. So, but I mean, imagine, you know, you've got two, you know, pretty good. Actually, I wouldn't even say pretty good. You've got two phenomenal comic book movies.
Well, yeah. You know? I mean, it would be amazing, and I don't expect Black Panther to win Best Picture, but it would be amazing if Best Picture and Best Animated Feature were both superhero comic book movies.
The world would be on fire if it won.
Yes, it would.
Oh, my God.
And all those people that say, oh, it's just popcorn stuff, and oh, it's just this and that, and it doesn't. Those movies don't belong. Well, guess what? Yeah. So, all right. So, we got a couple questions. And both kind of involve Marvel and Netflix. So Brandon Alvarado, He said, should any of the Marvel Netflix series be saved, or should all new characters and worlds be considered within the same universe as a priority? Could Marvel be leaving behind those established Netflix characters in favor of secondary film characters?
Hmm.
So we assume that this is referencing the Disney Plus service, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I hope they bring back some of the characters from Netflix. I know that there's some weird clause with the Punisher, which we'll probably get into in a minute. But, you know, Daredevil's season 3 was great. It really was. It was a good show. I mean, Vincent D'Onofrio, God, man, dude's so amazing. I'd love to see more of the Punisher. And I know that Charlie Cox has opened up and said, look, he's just waiting for the call. He would love to do something more with the character if it's on, you know, Disney Plus, or even if it's, you know, roping the character into an MCU proper film. So I do hope that they do it. The way it's going, I don't think it's going to happen. But I'd love it. I'd love if they salvaged those characters and brought them to life in new ways. You know, maybe mix them with Spider-Man, but that would be such a pipe dream, because I don't think Sony would ever let it happen.
Yeah, and I mean, I know, you know, I don't see why they need to get rid of the established characters, but if, I mean, if there's no plans on using them in the movies, they're not going to use them on the Disney Plus service, because if it seems like, you know, it's Marvel Studios that's going to be running that show, not Marvel Television, which we've talked about before. So because of that, if you're not going to bring them into the movies, why bother using them, you know, at all?
Unless people make such a stink.
I guess, which they could, but so far I don't really, I mean, yeah, we see it on Twitter, but it's very much, I think people at this point are basically resigned to the fact that these shows are going to be going away. And I don't see a lot of like, oh no, save these shows. I see more like, well, this will be the end of that.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of matter of fact. So maybe that's part of the reason why they're ending them. I don't think the hype has been there as much. And then how do you pick and choose?
Right.
Like, how do you say, well, we're going to keep Daredevil and Kingpin and Punisher, but we're going to get rid of everybody else.
Right.
So, I just think that it's a foregone conclusion that this will be the end of that. And
well, unless they create something completely different, do you think, right? So, I mean, what if they decided to do a Heroes for Hire, which then has an absolute, I mean, obviously they'll be taking those two characters, but it's not an Iron Fist show and it's not a Luke Cage show.
Well, yeah, I mean, for me, if I'm them, I look at it as these are properties that just got canceled, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that if I'm going to be looking at content from my streaming service where I have all of this amazing content at my disposal, if I'm going to want to bother revamping something like Heroes for Hire, which are two characters that just got canceled by a competitor. Like, why do that if you could dip into this incredible, you know, library of characters that you have, including like the Fox characters and all that stuff now. So the X-Men.
Right.
Why would you? I don't know that you would want to go down that road. I don't know that they were popular enough to warrant being.
Yeah, I was going to say
having something created for them over something new and fresh.
Yep. You kind of caught you. It was kind of weird. You just kind of faded out for a second. Oh. I thought Thanos snapped his fingers.
Huh.
That was weird.
Yeah.
Did it sound weird on your end?
It didn't sound like anything. It was me talking to nothing.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. You kind of got digitized.
Sweet.
You're being sucked into the Matrix, man.
Yeah.
Anyways.
So that's that. And the next question was from Ron Diesel. He asked if we had a chance to watch Punisher Season 2. If so, what are our thoughts? He thought that it was something was off this season. He felt like it was written for 7 episodes, but they stretched it to 13. So I kind
of
know what you're saying.
Marvel Netflix shows.
Yeah. I mean, I've only gotten 2 episodes in. And, you know, I mean, it's only 2 episodes. So it's a slow burn. It's hard to tell. Yeah. It's not grabbing me the way the first season did. But I mean, it's you know, it's still developing.
From John Bernthal.
Yeah, I mean, he's great. And I just think that for me, I prefer the Punisher, like when he's fighting the mob.
Right.
So I would kind of prefer that. And have it be like him fighting the mob and have it be like ultraviolet and stuff like that. Like, that's kind of the Punisher show I would prefer to see at this point. So this, this initial storyline where he's like saving the girl or whatever, that's not really doing much for me, but it's only two episodes. So let's see where it goes. But I have heard from a number of people that this season did feel kind of stretched out. And I'll know a lot of the Marvel shows are like that, although I don't know that they all feel like they could have been half as long.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat, so a couple of episodes in. And I tend to, for shows like The Punisher, and I did the same thing with Daredevil Season 3, was I take them, you know, bit by bit. I don't like to binge it. I like to kind of, you know, deconstruct it a little bit as I watch it. And I got to say, you know, I am enjoying the first couple of episodes. I agree. It's by nature, it just feels like a slower burn. Like, you're not really, you don't really know who people are. You don't really know what the motivations are, or, you know, where that girl he saves comes from and all of that stuff. But I will say that, you know, that first episode kicked things up rather quickly, in my opinion, with the whole fight sequences. I thought it was good. I thought it was great stuff. And the more I watch John Bernthal as the Punisher, the more I want him as Logan. He would be an amazing Wolverine. But I digress. I think, you know, we'll see. I've said this before about the Marvel shows. I think they do the same thing. They kind of stretch them a little bit, and it could be a very tight 10 episodes, but they typically kind of push it to 13 or so. So I can see how, you know, this would lose a little bit of steam as it makes its way through. But I'm enjoying it so far. So probably more to come on future episodes.
Yeah.
From us.
And then we'll talk about the cancellation.
I said it too. Somebody was commenting about it. You know, the season two wasn't as good as season one. And I was like, fret not, because it'll be canceled next week.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have to worry about season three, so don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Man. All right. Well, I guess that'll be it for today.
Yeah.
So we'll get into some plugs. Of course, you could always go to thefanboygarage.com to, check out our episode archive, buy some merch, shop the Amazon Associate link to help out the show. You can send us an email there as well if you're not engaged on social media. Check out revengeofthefans.com. We are part of the Revenge of the Fans podcast network, which is growing by the day. New shows keep getting added. It's exciting. And of course, you could always join the conversation with us on Twitter. You could find me at RealCLMighty.
And you can find me at Starting Sith on Twitter. And don't forget to check out our Instagram page, which is going to get more active. I've said this probably every episode, I promise it will be. And I also want to give a quick shout out to some folks who recommended Wolverine, The Long Night, which is a podcast, and Richard Armitage, who played, I'm totally blanking on the dwarf's name in The Hobbit, but who's the main dwarf?
Bilbo.
In The Hobbit. No, no, no.
Oh,
no,
the dwarves.
The dwarf.
I don't know.
What's it doing? Is it Balin? No. Whatever.
That thing.
That actor is the guy who voices Wolverine. And it's a fascinating story. It's a crime story. I definitely recommend it to folks who are looking for something different. It's the first time I've ever fallen into a sort of comic book story on a podcast. It's done by Stitcher and Marvel, and it's an awesome way of taking an adventure with one of the all-time favorite characters in the Marvel universe. it kind of threw me back to, you know, the way that things were done in the past, when people used to gather around the radio and listen to, you know, the shorts of Superman or, you know, the Shadow and all of that stuff. And that's kind of what this is. You know, they've got the sound effects and you've got multiple characters and it's a really condensed, tight story. Each episode's about 30 minutes long. So I definitely recommend people check it out because it's definitely worth it. So thanks to, let's see, JRB, Brent of Borderless Fans,
yep.
And a couple of other people, Brandon Alvarado, another one, who recommended this, and it's definitely awesome. So thanks.
Cool.
And that's all I got for you guys.
All right.
So cool. So we'll catch you guys on the next one.
Yep. Take care.